Have you ever stared at the ceiling at 3 a.m., suddenly struck by the bizarre reality of your own existence? Thomas Nagel's What Does It All Mean captures these moments of existential vertigo that visit us all. This slim volume doesn't just explain philosophy, it invites you to experience it. Nagel strips away academic pretension to address the profound questions that naturally emerge when we first look at the world with genuine wonder. How do I know anything exists outside my mind? What makes actions right or wrong? Is there any point to human existence? Rather than drowning us in historical context or technical jargon, Nagel treats philosophy as a living conversation about the questions that matter most. These aren't just abstract puzzles. They're the disorienting moments of clarity that interrupt our daily routines when we realize how strange it is to be anything at all. The only thing you can be absolutely certain of is what's happening in your own mind right now. Everything else reaches you exclusively through your experiences and sensations. Trying to prove the external world exists using visual experiences creates a circular argument. You're using impressions to verify impressions. Would anything seem different if everything were just an elaborate dream? This leads to two uncomfortable positions. Either only your mind exists, solipsism, or you can't know anything beyond your impressions, skepticism. Even your past existence becomes questionable, as you only have present memories, which are just current mental states. What's fascinating is that despite compelling arguments for skepticism, it remains practically impossible to truly believe nothing exists outside your mind. You might philosophically doubt reality for an hour, then get hungry and head to the kitchen without questioning whether the refrigerator exists. This persistent belief in reality, despite our inability to prove it, reveals something fundamental about human nature. Imagine sharing ice cream with your best friend. You both claim to love chocolate, but how do you know their experience matches yours? What if their chocolate tastes like your strawberry? You've never directly experienced another's consciousness. You only observe their behavior and words. This isn't mere philosophy. It raises profound questions about animal suffering and potential AI consciousness. When someone claims to understand your feelings, they're attempting to bridge an unbridgeable gap. The problem deepens. How do we know which beings are conscious at all? Perhaps trees have experiences utterly different from ours, but we can't detect this because consciousness isn't directly observable outside ourselves. Your belief that others have minds is instinctive rather than evidence-based. We're like islands in an archipelago, close enough to see each other but never able to visit. Yet through language, art, and empathy, we build bridges anyway, creating connections despite never truly knowing another's mind. This mystery reveals a fundamental limitation in human knowledge. No matter our closeness to others, consciousness remains essentially private, a hidden dimension that science can observe the correlates of, but never directly access. When you taste chocolate, your brain shows complex neuronal activity, yet a neuroscientist observing every cell would see only electrical patterns and chemical changes, not your actual taste experience. Your experience seems locked inside, unobservable to others, even with direct access to your brain. This suggests mental states can't simply be physical states. There must be more to you than just your physical body. Several possibilities exist. Dualism, you consist of physical organism and non-physical mind. Physicalism, people are nothing but physical matter, mental states or brain states. Or dual aspect theory, your brain has both physical and mental aspects. The fundamental problem is explaining how physical elements, when arranged in certain ways, form not just a biological organism, but a conscious being with subjective experiences. Physical science has progressed by excluding mind from what it explains, yet perhaps there's more to the world than physical science can understand. This isn't merely academic speculation. It touches on profound questions about human identity. Are you your body, your mind, or some combination? If your consciousness could be uploaded to a computer, would that still be you? The mind-body problem reminds us that despite scientific progress, we still don't fully understand what we are. How can mere sounds or marks on paper mean something? The word elephant doesn't resemble an actual elephant, yet these arbitrary symbols allow us to discuss everything from microscopic particles to abstract concepts. Tobacco refers to every instance worldwide, past and future, not just samples you've seen. You can ask meaningful questions about all tobacco despite encountering only a fraction. This reveals language's strange power. Meaning isn't located in the word, the mind, or some hovering concept, yet enables thinking about things across vast reaches of time and space. Language is humanity's most remarkable achievement. It allows us to transcend immediate experience, share inner lives, and build knowledge across generations. We understand how to use it far better than what it is. We remain finite creatures who somehow use symbols to grasp the entire world and even invent things that don't exist. When you regret choosing chocolate cake over a peach, you assume you could have chosen differently while everything else remained the same. But determinism challenges this view, suggesting your circumstances make your choice inevitable. Natural laws might govern everything, including human decisions, through an unbroken chain of causes. This raises questions about responsibility. How can we praise or blame anyone for actions they couldn't avoid? Some argue we can still condemn bad actions, even if inevitable, while others disagree. If determinism is false, another problem emerges. If nothing determined your choice, was it truly your doing or just random chance? We face a dilemma. Either determinism is true and circumstances are responsible, or it's false and nothing is. This isn't mere philosophical wordplay. Our moral and legal systems rest on the assumption of free choice, yet examining this metaphysically leads us into a philosophical maze with no clear exit. We all face death, but disagree about what it means. Some believe in afterlife, heaven, hell, or reincarnation. Others believe death ends existence, with reactions ranging from terror to acceptance. We cannot truly conceive of our own non-existence. Imagining it from the inside is impossible, because there is no inside. You must think of yourself objectively, as a body without life or experience. If death is the end, its value must be negative, the absence of something. The thought that the world continues without you creates a peculiar fear different from our acceptance of not existing before birth. This fear is puzzling, since non-existence means no experience of anything frightening. Yet many find annihilation terrifying beyond logical explanation. Perhaps we fear not death itself, but the ending of all possibilities. Our attitudes toward death reveal how we value life. If we fear death because it ends experiences we value, this suggests those experiences have intrinsic worth regardless of duration. Perhaps life's value depends not on length, but on quality, the depth of our connections, and the meaning we create.